Hello, friends. It's your old pal, Arya Helwani, back with another edition of The Helwani Show. We got a very exciting one, a very eclectic one coming your way. But before we get to all of that, I've told you about our good friends over at DraftKings, right? You know DraftKings. You love DraftKings. Well, it just so happens that as the host of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast, my colleagues right here at ESPN, Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, and Daniel Dupp, tell you the very best fantasy football strategies so you, yes, you, can win money playing in your leagues or on sites like DraftKings. Fantasy Focus is a daily show. It is one of ESPN's most popular podcasts, and it is guaranteed to make you laugh each and every time. So I strongly suggest you check out the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast wherever you find your favorite podcast. And while you're there, remember to tell them your boy the nose. Okay, on to today's show, and remember, as always, listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. And as always, we are presented by Modelo. Modelo Especial. Root for those with a fighting spirit. My friends, like I said at the top, we have a very fun, exciting, and eclectic show for all of you. Later in the program, we'll hear a little bit of my conversation with one of the all-time greats in the world of the NFL, Marshawn Lynch. Yes, in fact, he is transitioning into the world of martial arts. I'll tell you a little more about all of that. We will also hear from one of the all-time great characters in the history of the sport and one of the men who I believe is a pioneer of mixed martial arts, certainly from Brazil. He is the one and only Valid Ismael. He is the manager of one Paulo Borrachinha Costa, who, of course, faces Israel Adesanya this Saturday at UFC 253 for the undisputed middleweight title. But he has been around this game a long, long time, a former fighter turned promoter, now manager as well. Also the manager for Davison Figueiredo, who is the UFC flyweight champion. And on top of all of that, one of the great characters in the history of this sport, just an unbelievable character with a lot of energy and just always so fun. And longtime listeners of the MMA Hour will remember Valid. He has had some classic appearances on the show. Let me just say, he doesn't require a lot of questions. He just kind of goes off on his own, and it's a lot of fun. So we'll talk to him about the Costa fight, the exchange in the hallway earlier this week in Abu Dhabi, and all that stuff and more. Later, I'll talk a little more about 253. But for now, let us say hello to the one and only Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler, of course, recently signed with the UFC. He's involved in this weird scenario at 254, backup fighter. Will he fight? Will he not fight? All this stuff and more. Of course, the multi-time Bellator lightweight champion, fought for them on August 7th, fought out his deal, and then ended up signing with the UFC last week. We talked to Michael Chandler now on the program about signing with the UFC, leaving Bellator, his time in Bellator, and will he in fact fight on October 24? All that and more right now in my conversation with Michael Chandler. He is the one and only Michael Chandler, who is kind enough to give us some time here on this Wednesday. And I'm so happy that he is doing so because he has been making the media rounds. I mean, you have talked to everyone under the sun, Michael, and now you have carved out a few minutes for your old pal, Ariel. Thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome, man. You're very, very welcome. You know, I had to barely carve out some time for you.
This is like when you're, you know, juicing, you know, like when you're doing like an orange juice and there's only like a little bit left. I'm trying to squeeze at the last. I mean, you've talked to everyone, like
first
a kid's starting his own blog.
First of all, that's not true.
I'm the shriveled up orange here with a little bit of juice left.
Orange peel. You're like, maybe I can get a little bit of extra vitamin C out of this just shriveled up orange peel. I think it's been sitting in the refrigerator for a couple of days. No, that's not true. Numerous articles have come out as if I was speaking to a bunch of media outlets, but I think they were just taking stuff from Instagram lives and stuff I was doing. You know, you're my favorite. Just don't tell anyone else. No one else will see this, right?
Okay. No one's going to see this. Okay, absolutely good. Not. Good. Well, first things first, congratulations. This is a really big deal. I know it's something that's been on your mind for quite some time. I want to start here. August 7th, you beat Benson Henderson. Mohegan Sun. Yeah. When you left the cage that night, did you know it would be your last time walking out of a Bellator cage?
I think I did. I did, you know, and it's so interesting hearing everybody's perspective. You know, everybody thought it was just a ploy for me to try to get more money from Bellator, or a ploy to try to, you know, drive the price up. But, you know, I had a phenomenal run in Bellator. Bellator is very much who they are, the organization that they are, because of the fights that I put on. And I am who I am because of the promotion and the opportunities that they afforded me. It was very much a great symbiotic relationship for a decade. I tried my best to be the best employee I possibly could for them. And you heard it in my post-fight speech. You know, I even got a little bit choked up, man. A guy who is near and dear to my heart, Mike Sarnowski, was holding the microphone for that last, you know, post-fight speech. And I really, truly meant it, that every single heartbeat in that entire organization, from the front of the house to the back of the house, to the people that are checking us in, to the medicals, to all the people I've been on the phone with for the last 10 years, these people have touched my life and impacted my life in ways that the fans and the media will never know. But I think I had made up my mind that I was probably going to make a change, and it was going to take either a really crazy offer or, you know, just a big time change of heart. At that moment when I walked outside that cage, it was the hardest moment of my life, because it was the craziest moments of my life, you know, leading up to one of the biggest pressure filled situations. But I think I knew.
Why did you feel like you had to make a change? Why now, as opposed to in the past? And even if they gave you a good deal, it seemed like they always treated you well. You were for a long time the face of Bellator, dare I say. Why did you feel like you had to make a change now?
You know, it was. Sometimes in life, I think doors start to open and things start to manifest themselves, whether it be outside circumstances or internal feelings, internal desires. And I think I could just see things changing, see things maturing. And it wasn't a maturation process as in I outgrew Bellator, but it was just things weren't looking the same to my eyes, to my mind's eye, in my heart, in my spirit. And truthfully, when I've been in this sport now for 11 years, I always told, you know, 10 years ago when people asked me, how long are you going to fight? I say, I'll probably retire by the time I'm 35. At this point, I can't see myself retiring anytime earlier than 37, 38, 39 years old. I feel better at 34 than I did at 24. So when you're firing on all cylinders, when you're feeling the best you've ever felt, and you go out and you dispatch a guy like Benson Henderson and knock him out, I knew especially if I had a dominant performance, I was going to be put in pole position to be able to make whatever decision I wanted to. And when you have options in life, my manager Dave Martin always says this: options in life are a good thing, especially in this sport. And we knew we were going to have options, and you know, we went through the free agency process, and here we are, man. Hopefully, October 24th.
So we've seen people roll the dice and fight out their contract, but then they lose that last one, right? You rolled the dice, fought it out, and won in impressive fashion. How nervous were you before that fight in the locker room on Friday, on Thursday, that week in Connecticut? How nervous were you considering the stakes? This was arguably one of the biggest fights of your life, considering what could happen if you win in impressive fashion.
For sure, the biggest fight of my life. And I'm extremely blessed with a phenomenal competitor's mindset. Whenever that fight day comes and I get that hard workout in the morning, and then it's time to go, you know, throughout the rest of my day, go get wrapped up, go to the locker room, I'm locked in. I'm ready to go compete. I'm a lion ready to get inside that cage and go. But the 12 weeks leading up to that fight was some of the hardest emotional roller coaster I've ever been in my entire life. So to paint a picture really quickly, numerous teammates testing positive for COVID-19, coaches testing positive for COVID-19. You've spoken to dozens and dozens of fighters who everyone was testing positive for COVID-19. I'm in Florida. It's a crazy hotspot for COVID-19. It's the last fight of my contract. Not only do I need to win this fight, but I need to look good. I'm fighting a guy in Benson Henderson who has a knack, who is very, very good at making guys not look good. He has a knack for making world-class fighters not look that good. Even if you beat him, it's hard to dominate Benson Henderson. So a ton of pressure in that regard, a ton of pressure from essentially, you know, saying no to Bellator's offer. You know, when you say no to an offer, you're essentially saying, hey, I'm betting on myself and I can go get something better elsewhere, or go watch me and see what I do inside that cage August 7th, and then we'll come back and talk. So it took a lot of, you know, cojones to do that. And so it was just a ton of pressure. And I think I'd be lying if I didn't say it affected me. But luckily, on fight day, in that moment. I think it all manifested itself in my post-fight celebration when I just screamed, yes, you know, five times in an empty arena. So it sounded extra, extra loud, and I sounded extra, extra psycho. But I think that was the moment where all the weight was lifted. The 6,000-pound gorilla was off my chest. And at that moment, nothing bad could go wrong anymore for me. A, not to get a paycheck. B, not to look impressive going into free agency. And it all worked out well, thank God.
Going into that fight, when was the last time they offered you a deal?
We had spoken months before, you know, and that's what my manager had said, Dave Martin, said, hey, listen, we'll negotiate up until that cage door closes and that bell rings. But as soon as that bell rings, you know, you can't unring that bell. And Michael's going to go out there. He's going to do what he does. And he's going to become a free agent. He's going to make the best decision for himself, his wife and his son. And it was a couple months before. And, you know, we never got a deal done, obviously.
Were you at all insulted that you didn't get a deal done?
No, because, you know, if you look at adverse experiences or adverse circumstances in life, but something good comes out of them, were they really adverse circumstances, or were they just predestined doors to be closed that would eventually help you make the best decision possible with the information that you had? Now imagine Bellator offers me a phenomenal deal and I'm just chomping at the bit to sign it and I'm excited about it. I don't sit here and talk to you about now signing with the UFC and me truly believing that I'm going to be the UFC lightweight champion in the next 12 months. You know, sometimes, and I think that's what's happened. And that was my conversation that I had with Dana when we spoke, was that, you know, it wasn't because I had never fought for the UFC, not because I didn't want to. I've wanted to fight for the UFC for a long time. It just never worked out that way. And then contract negotiation after contract negotiation happened, and I was extremely happy and I was extremely taken care of. And Bellator knew I had made myself an indispensable asset to Bellator, and you know, they needed me from a business standpoint. They liked me as a person, and you know, we always got a deal done. This time, that door closing or them not making an offer turned out to be what needed to happen, and it worked out perfectly. And here we are, and I couldn't be happier to be sitting in this spot right here. Excited about 5 weeks from now.
You're one of the few guys who was at the top in the Bjorn Bellator days and top of the Scott Coker Bellator days. Which era did you like better?
You know, they were definitely different. You know, I think back to a bunch of really great memories from the Bjorn era. I mean, that was when I became who I was. You know, the Michael Chandler who came out of nowhere was 1,000-1,000-0 underdog against a guy named Eddie Alvarez, who was top three in the world at the time. And I go out there and finish him. And with that, riding the wave of all of that. And then you got a guy like Scott Coker who came in. And I'll never forget, I flew up to San Jose as soon as he took over. We sat down at a coffee shop, a cafe, had breakfast at San Jose one morning when he took over, and we just talked. We talked about philosophy. We talked about what he was going to do with the promotion. We talked about him building the promotion. And Scott Coker, Rich Chu, Mike Kogan, and then Rich Chu had always been Scott Coker's right-hand man through the Strikeforce days. And then Mike Kogan comes in, who I hadn't worked with a ton. And then Mike Kogan is an extremely impressive individual who came in and was helping out a ton as well. So I would say the newer regime, you know, where Bellator is positioned right now with their staff, with their credentials, with their expertise in the market, they're, you know, they're a good organization. They know what they're doing. And I would say the new regime I liked fighting for better.
After August 7th, did they ever try to re-sign you? Did they make you a serious offer?
I think they did, but they wanted to, but we already had made our decision. We said we will negotiate with you all the way up until that bell rings. And as soon as that bell rings, you can't unring the bell. And then 2 minutes and 9 seconds after that bell rang, Benson Henderson was unconscious, and the rest is history, as they say. And there really wasn't much of a reason. You know, we had that exclusive negotiation period that was probably the longest 2 weeks of my entire life. You know, I just spent 12 weeks away from my family, and I wanted to go on vacation, give my time and my love and my service to my wife and my son, who I hadn't seen in so long. But all I could think about was, when's that phone going to ring? When's the letter going to come through? What's going to happen next? You know, this story is just now heating up and getting started. But you know, we knew we really weren't going to entertain an offer. Of course, you know, money talks and offers talk. I mean, they could throw a crazy number out there and be like, okay, well now you got my attention. But for the most part, we wanted to hear what the UFC had to offer, had to say, what PFL, what ONE FC, and ultimately here we are.
So we'll get to UFC in a second, but how close were you with the PFL? I know you talked to PFL. How close were you with them? With one championship, you could do the Eddie Alvarez fight. How close were you with those guys?
Close. I mean, I wouldn't really say close. I mean, we had offers, you know, but I wouldn't say we were close. I think, you know, at the expense of not sounding like I wasn't taking the other offer seriously, I knew where my heart wanted to go. I knew my heart wanted to be sitting right here doing this interview with you with a UFC, hopefully title on the line soon, or a fight in the UFC soon. I knew in my heart that's what I wanted. But what you want and what you get isn't always doesn't always happen, and it's not always the same thing. PFL, Peter Murray, those guys, extremely impressive. It was awesome to sit across the table with them. Won championship as well. But ultimately, it felt like home. When I flew to Vegas and I sat with Hunter Campbell and spoke to Dana, it felt like I was home. It felt like everything over the last 11 years had been preparing me and fashioning me and galvanizing me, beating me down and building me back up for this moment, this opportunity, and signing this contract.
You could have fooled me with the interview part. I mean, talk to everyone before you talk to me. I mean, you just had to stick that one in there, but that's okay.
Come on, man.
When you talk about meeting Dana, was that the first time you've ever met him face to face, had a serious conversation with him?
I think back and I can't remember, but I cornered Miles Jury a couple times. I cornered a couple other guys. I think one time I was holding Miles Jury's clothes and I walked up on the weigh-in stage and I shook his hand one time real quick or whatever, or maybe he came in the back, but no, I never really had any conversations with Dana. So this was the first time. And then Hunter Campbell as well. Hunter Campbell is an extremely impressive guy. The sports franchise that these guys are building and running right now is just ridiculous, and it's awesome to be a part of it.
Can you paint that picture for me? What is that first real meeting like? I'm assuming it's in Vegas. You're in the office. It's an impressive new headquarters they have there. It's Dana White. It's Hunter Campbell, the right-hand man. It's your chance to finally make that move to the UFC. You're a free agent. You got multiple suitors. What is that day like for you? What is that meeting like for you? And if you can add, what was it like when you walked out of the room as well, when you went back to your hotel, back on the plane?
So I'll give you some of it. I'm not going to give you all the information.
Oh, come on, Mike, give us all of it, for God's sake. There's no more interviews to do. This is your last chance.
Someday we'll be able to appreciate this. But, so I actually didn't meet with Dana. I met with Hunter Campbell. So we were there, we had this meeting set with Hunter Campbell, and we were going to, and Dana was hopefully going to be there. And it turns out, I think Dana was there, but then he had to go catch a flight real quick. So we sat with Hunter Campbell for about an hour. As I said, I felt like I was home. You know, I felt like, and we'll get to it in a second, but if this had been 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been ready for that meeting. 4 years ago, this wouldn't have been ready for that meeting. That's why you have to employ extreme patience in order to get what you really want in life. Because if I have that meeting 2 years prior, 4 years prior, maybe it doesn't go as well. Maybe I'm not sitting here and we're talking about it. At that moment, when given that opportunity, searching for that kind of wisdom in a meeting, the biggest meeting of your entire life, it went extremely seamlessly. Hunter was telling me why I needed to come to the UFC. I was telling him how he and Dana have never in their entire existence with the UFC signed a guy who was more equally yoked with the organization, with the brass, with the mission of what the UFC is, and how they've never signed a guy who's going to work as hard inside the cage and outside of the cage as I am. And that's just who I am. That's what I've always been. With me, you get what you see. And I am who I am, and I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. And after leaving that meeting, you know, my manager was with me there, Randall Alleman. He was in the meeting with me. He was corresponding with Hunter a couple minutes after, said, "Hey, Dana wants his number." Dana called me a couple minutes later. We had a really great talk. And that talk ended up having Dana call Hunter and say, "Hey, let's get something done." And, a couple minutes later, he called me back. He said, "Hey, we're going to get something done." 48 hours later, we had something done.
Wow. That quickly, huh? How long ago was that?
I want to say, I mean, shoot, I've already been in Florida now training for a week. And so it was two and a half weeks ago.
And when they're sitting with you, at the time, correct me if I'm wrong, it's Tony Ferguson versus Dustin Poirier at 254. You're not really in that mix, right? Are they even talking to you about the scenario that you're in now, or are they talking about something else?
No, not really. I mean, we, you know, obviously, you know, there's always the hypotheticals. Hey, you know, how's your body? How you feel? Are you ready to fight? I said, yeah, I'm ready to fight. You know, how about, you know, and of course they threw the things out there. Hey, we got, you know, 253 in Abu Dhabi. We got 254 in Abu Dhabi. Will you be ready for these? And I said, hey, man, I'm ready tomorrow. You know, sign me up, put me in, let's go. I'm ready tomorrow. You know, that's the beauty of just coming off of a training camp, albeit my body was a little bit run down, a little bit beat up from the fight and whatnot, but I'm ready to go. Like I can fight with little nagging injuries. So they knew I was down. They knew I was ready to fight whoever. And then, yeah, I mean, it wasn't necessarily talked about as in, you know, hey, would you fight Tony Ferguson or fight Dustin Poirier? We're going to try to make it happen. It was, hey, hypothetically, are you down to fight this date or these guys? And I said, I'll fight anybody in the top five. I'm not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time. Let's do this thing. Pull your hat down tight because I only know one speed. And they loved it. And they said, well, okay, we'll start working on some things.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So last week, what is that like for you as they finally announced that you are joining the company and there's all this stuff going on with Ferguson and Poirier and now you're the backup fighter after all of this? Because I feel like maybe you got some backlash. You're not the one making the decision. You're just the guy who's saying, I'll take the opportunity, as you should, as anyone would. But meanwhile, you have these two very popular and likable fighters who are kind of, you know, banding together to try to, you know, get the deal that they both want. And you're kind of being in there and you're being offered to both guys. And it's a lot of drama. What is that like for you? Because I could imagine that some people are like, oh, you're kind of messing this up and they're using you as leverage and all this stuff. What was that like for you?
Yeah. You know, you underestimate how much you really are in the court of public opinion, you know, sometimes, especially whenever stuff like this happens, whenever these kind of, when this big news breaks that, hey, we've signed Michael Chandler. Oh, and by the way, UFC 254 backup. Meanwhile, you got these two guys who Dustin Poirier, I met Dustin. It's very interesting. I've been in the sport now for 11 years. I've never met or been around Dustin Poirier until 6 weeks ago when I saw him at my fight on fight week. And I went straight up to him. I shook his hand, said, hey man, you are a warrior. Your fight with Dan Hooker, I'm a huge fan of you, who you are as a man inside the cage, outside of the cage. You are a warrior. You are the epitome of what us fighters need to be like. He said pretty much the same exact thing about me. He's a fan of my work and follow me and blah, blah, blah. So there's a ton of mutual respect there. Tony Ferguson, don't really know a ton about him. I don't necessarily feel the same way about him as I do Dustin Poirier. But I respect him as a competitor. He's the scariest guy in the division. He is the boogeyman for a reason. These guys have a great reputation inside the sport. So yeah, insert Michael Chandler, insert all the different adjectives and slandersome terms that people want to throw at me, like B-League fighter and USADA and this, da, 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 whatever. Coupled with you haven't done anything to earn it. And I'm just like, hey man, I'm just showing up. Preparation meets opportunity. I don't really know how you guys want me to react. All I know is I'm going to do exactly what I have set out to do since day one. Train my butt off, try to be a good person, operate with integrity, show up when, where, and against whom they tell me to fight. In this scenario, it's October 24th, possibly Khabib or Gaethje. If not, I look at it like a perfect dry run for me to go fly to Abu Dhabi, go throughout the fight week, make weight, step on the UFC scale for the first time, meet all the brass, all the staff, all the people, do all the media stuff, all the hoopla, And maybe it's a dry run and I don't fight. Maybe it's a perfect dry run for or maybe I actually do fight, but it's a perfect dry run either way.
Are you getting a good deal to just make weight?
We don't know yet.
What do you mean you don't know yet?
Nor will I tell you,
Harry. Oh, you could say you won't tell me. I hope you know.
It remains to be seen. Okay. I played the tip on this one.
What about the USADA stuff? How much does this annoy you? That was the first – everyone, oh, he's not going to pass. He's not going to pass. To the best of my knowledge, you've never failed the test.
No. And what people don't realize is, was I under USADA and Bellator? No. But if you are the champion, the main event, or fighting for the title, if you're in a title fight or in the main event, you were getting tested. You do the math. I was in 11 title fights in Bellator, and I was the main event two or three other times. So I know it was at least 11 times. I know I got tested in Japan under Mohegan Sun. My last test was a WADA full spectrum test, which is the exact whatever they call it panel, the WADA full panel that USADA uses in a urine test, August 7th. So I just got that done. So I mean, you know, to me, it's, you know, you can kind of look at it both sides. Of course, it's annoying, but I don't. I guess fault people for having any kind of skepticism. Number one, he doesn't pass the eye test because I guess they think athletes shouldn't look the way that I look if they're clean, allegedly. Secondly, I wasn't governed by USADA. And lastly, you know, people just love to hurl. They will always criticize either A, things they don't understand, or B, things that they're intimidated by. And I think the way that I look or the way that I compete just makes people want to say certain things. But the good thing is, being in the USADA pool, that's a plus. Now, 1 year clean, it's going to be plus. 2 years clean, 3 years, and so on and so on. And they can say, and eventually people will say, man, okay, maybe the guy was clean all along.
My understanding is that they haven't given up, and this is my belief as well, that they were going to do this. They haven't given up trying to find you an opponent on October 24th. What are the chances if Khabib and Gaethje fight on October 24th that you are fighting as well against someone else, perhaps a Ferguson, perhaps a Poirier, perhaps someone else? But my understanding is they haven't given up. I know it was sort of presented as you're the backup fighter, but my understanding is they haven't given up. What are the chances you fight someone if that fight still remains intact?
Yeah, I mean, that's my understanding as well. You know, I'm training for October 24th, and I'm training every day as if my phone may ring and my manager calls me and says, hey, you're fighting this guy on October 24th. And if something does happen to Gaethje or Khabib, you're also in that fight as well. And then they'll pivot and make a different decision. Either way, as I said, I've made my living off of showing up when, where, and against whom my promoter tells me to. And it's no different in this scenario. It's just on a bigger stage on probably arguably the biggest fight of the year. And you insert my name into the mix as the number one contender, essentially, that's a pretty good spot to be.
Do you have a preference? If you had your way, and I hope you don't take offense to this, but I hope you don't fight for the belt on October 24th, because I hope something that bad doesn't happen to Khabib and Gaethje. I think you can respect that, right?
100%.
So, but I'd love to see you fight on October 24th. Cause I think, you know, funny story, Michael, UFC 165, which was actually 7 years ago this week. I was in Toronto to cover UFC 165. It was in 2013. And I remember that week, this was shortly after I think you defended the title once. You beat Eddie Alvarez. You defended the title once, maybe twice. And I said that week that you were the best lightweight in the world. A high-ranking official with the UFC, who is actually still at the UFC, came up to me. I'll never forget, at the weigh-ins at UFC 165. He said, "Michael Chandler is the best lightweight in the world. Are you nuts?" I said, "Yes, I think right now he's the best lightweight in the world." And so it's crazy for me that you're here. Like, longtime fans and people who have followed the sport have wanted to see you test yourself against the best in the UFC's lightweight division. So I want to see you fight on October 24th. I'm just wondering, if it can't be for the belt, do you have a preference who that debut is against?
Obviously, as I said, the deal wasn't necessarily predicated on fighting, you know, any certain guys. But I love the Ferguson fight. I love the Poirier fight. I think, you know, as I said, I don't want to come in and act like I need to not, you know, prove myself and whatnot. But I think, I mean, right away, why shouldn't I fight a top five guy right away? You know, I think Poirier, I think Ferguson. Obviously, you got Connor, who's retired and still in that top five. And then you got Gaethje, you got Khabib. You know, I mean, those are kind of the guys, right? I think it would be some bad luck that would befall the UFC, obviously, if I have to step in there, you know, because that means you don't get Khabib versus Gaethje. But all I know is I'm going to be ready. But I would love to fight October 24th. I would love for it not to be a dry run and not just to make weight for no reason. But it's not making weight for no reason. Let me, you know, recant that statement. Not making weight for no reason. It's having an insurance policy on the biggest card of the year. You know, it's the biggest card of the year. Huge fight. When Khabib steps into the cage, it's always a huge draw. And that's the fight that I would want. Obviously, you know, you don't want the bad luck to happen. But if you're going to fight one of those guys, Justin Gaethje, and I said this, and I'm the kind of guy who I'm not afraid to say respectful things about my foes or my current opponents or my possible future opponents, that I think Justin Gaethje looked like the best lightweight in the entire planet when he fought Tony Ferguson back in May. That version, that calm and composed, that smart and sharp, that altogether relentless Justin Gaethje that we saw step into the cage against Tony Ferguson was the best lightweight in the world on that night. With that being said, I still think Khabib is the pound for pound number one. He's undefeated. So I would want that opportunity more than I would want the Gaethje opportunity. But at this point, fighting for the UFC on Fight Island live on pay-per-view October 24th, I'll take any of them.
If that Gaethje shows up, you think he wins?
I don't, but I think it's going to be a less dominant decision than we're used to seeing by Khabib. I think Gaethje's got the wrestling that will thwart a lot of Khabib's early takedowns, I think. You also got to remember, too, with the tenacity in which Khabib moves forward and grabs your legs, puts you up against the cage, picks you up and puts you down, that's also going to make Justin Gaethje gun-shy. Justin Gaethje wasn't really worried about Tony Ferguson rolling over in the Imanari roll or whatever that thing is, or throwing sand in his eyes, you know. He wasn't worried about that, so he was able to throw strikes freely and without many repercussions. That's not the same with Khabib. You overextend on a hook with Khabib, he's underneath. You overextend with the right hand on Khabib, he's underneath. You're up against the cage, you're on your back, you're in the Dagestani handcuff really quickly, and you're going to be hard pressed to be able to get out of there. So I still think Khabib wins, but I think it's a less dominant than we're used to seeing decision.
And at this point, so you said you're in Florida. How are things at Sanford? Has it quieted down? I mean, the outbreak and all that stuff, do you feel comfortable training there?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's the beautiful thing. Cause like I said, last training camp every day, you know, a new person would walk into the gym or someone would bring their, you know, their massage therapist for after practice. And you're like, why are they in here? Why are they in here? And, you know, cause it doesn't become a friend to friend, teammate to teammate thing. It just becomes business. It becomes, if you are making this decision, you're possibly putting me at risk to not get my paycheck to feed my family, you know? So it was a hard thing to navigate. Now it almost feels like coronavirus to me doesn't even exist. We're still doing the protocols. We still are spraying down the mats before and after every single practice. We're wearing our masks going into practice. We have a world-class facility both next to us, which is Barwis Performance, and Sanford Mixed Martial Arts, where we have cutting-edge healthcare, cutting-edge staff, coaching staff, and fighters. So it's I was just actually talking to our orthopedic surgeon on staff. I was just speaking to him about some stuff. He's coming down here next week too, and we've all got it lined up. Hey, we're going to get in to check out this ankle, this knee, this shoulder, this elbow. So to have that kind of medical knowledge around you at all times is nothing short of amazing. So it's the shackles are off, man. It's time to train extremely hard and hopefully for October 24th.
And speaking of which, mentally, how hard is it to train for a fight that you don't have just yet, an opponent that doesn't exist? How difficult is that?
It's definitely interesting. You know, it's definitely something that's different. It's definitely because they are two completely different styles. It's not as though I'm fighting, Khabib and then another guy who is, you know, well-versed on the ground, or Gaethje and then a Poirier who's predominantly a striker. You know, I either have
to – You have to prepare for like four guys, right?
Essentially the Poirier Ferguson, as you said, I to my knowledge, I haven't been necessarily told that, hey, we're still actively working on these guys, but, I'm sure – the fight could happen if one of those guys makes a call. You think Poirier Ferguson, you think Khabib and Gaethje, essentially I'm just I spend 80 to 90% of my training focused on me, my strengths, my attributes. How do I increase my strengths and how do I increase my, make better my weaknesses? And then the last 10%, 20% of my training, we focus on watching tape and watching the little habits and idiosyncrasies of a certain fighter that we may fight or should be fighting. Most of the time, you know by now, but in this case, we don't. So I'm brushing up on my cage work and my groundwork for the possible Khabib matchup, and I'm brushing up on my striking and continual wrestling, chain wrestling with strikes, mixing it up for a possible Gaethje showdown. But either way, I think the best version of myself, the most confident version of myself coming off of one of the best performances of my life and now signing with, the ultimate proving grounds in the UFC, getting the opportunity October 24th, I think the best version of myself is going to come out either way and seize the day, baby.
Okay, just a couple of quick things before I let you go. Again, thank you for the time. After all those interviews, you must be so tired of talking about this, but I appreciate you carving out some time. What do you think of Patricio Pitbull's tweet after you signed?
I don't really want to comment, honestly, because it's going to become a headline and he doesn't deserve a headline. But it's all I know is let's talk about philosophy. Let's talk about a philosophy. Some people have a scarcity mindset and some people have an abundance mindset. A scarcity mindset says because you, Ariel, are winning, that means you're taking away the winning from the rest of us. That means I can't win as much as I want to win because you're winning. An abundance mindset says there's enough money, there's enough popularity, there's enough things out there that I can go and people can go and accomplish. And whenever I see one man have success, that doesn't mean that my success is being diminished or the possibility of me having success is being diminished. Celebrate people's accomplishments. Celebrate people's moving up in life or having success in life, because ultimately things always work out better for you. That's all I'll say about that.
Fair enough. And right now, would it be fair to say, because I know, Bellator, like you said, they treated you well. Is this the best deal of your career?
It's the deal that felt the best, and I made the best decision possible for myself and my family. I'm getting compensated a fair wage for my services inside the cage, and that's all I'll say.
How many fights?
1,000.
1,000 fights?
My career.
You said you're not here for a long time. You're here for a good time.
Hey, but I gotta lock myself in at least,
Why does everyone get so weird when I ask about how many fights? I'm not asking for how much.
We all do, but that's
why.
There's a lot of different factors, not the least of which is that Ariel, sometimes, you got to look out for number one, and number one for me is my wife and my son.
Make the best
decision possible to be to be the best fighter, the best man, the best employee, and the best everything that you possibly can. So that's where that happens.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. Last one. A lot of great fighters at Samford, right? Yep. Free agency isn't something that everyone does. It's not something that everyone feels comfortable doing. Given the experience that you just went through, and it sounds like you're very happy with the way it turned out, would you recommend to every fighter out there, and I'm not talking about, the guy in LFA trying to make it to the UFC, obviously that's different, but in your spot, right, with your accomplishments, with your tenure, to test free agency, to fight out their deals and see what's out there. And maybe it's going back to the place. It doesn't mean that it's personal. It doesn't mean that you're unhappy, but just to see what's out there, given this landscape, would you recommend that?
I would. But it has to be the perfect storm of what have you done for your promotion lately? What have you done for the MMA world lately? Where is your skill set? Is your trajectory forward or is it stagnant or is it going backwards? For me, I knew I was moving forward. I knew I was only getting better. I knew my name and platform was only growing. So if you're in that position, I don't see why you shouldn't. Is it uncomfortable? Absolutely. Is it scary? Absolutely. But nothing great in life was ever accomplished by trying to shy away from fearful, or scary scenarios. Life begins and ends at the end of your comfort zone, getting outside of your comfort zone. And trust me, I've been outside of my comfort zone a lot over the last 11 years, but this was definitely outside of my comfort zone and I'm reaping the benefits and the rewards of it now. And the best is yet to come. So stay tuned.
Amen. Well done. Congratulations on the big deal. Don't forget about those people who said that you were the best lightweight in the world many moons ago.
7 years ago. I know, right?
I mean, right? Come on. And you've been doing it longer than that. When was that fight against Eddie? 2011 off the top of my head?
2011, 9 years ago.
Unbelievable. Here you are, 34 years young, ready to go, potentially fighting for the belt. If not, a big fight on a big show. A lot of good things coming your way, and you deserve it, Mike. So congratulations on the deal. Congratulations on everything happening, and good luck in training.
Thank you, Earl. I appreciate it.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And now let us say hello to the man who discovered Paulo Bojachinha many moons ago. And he's with him in Abu Dhabi as he prepares for his first UFC title fight. The one and only, the incomparable, the often imitated, never duplicated, the legend, Waleed Ismael. Waleed, it's been a while, my friend. How are you?
Wonderful, man. Wonderful. I'm happy to be here. And let's go talk about this war. It's going to happen on September 26th. It's going to be amazing, man. The atmosphere here in Abu Dhabi is unbelievable.
I love it. Let me ask you, when did you first meet Paulo? Do you remember?
Yes, it was in Jungle Fight. He came to fight, and he beat a guy who's undefeated as well. Was funny because the guy coached my friends too. Say, hey, Waleed, you want to put the power against my guy's weight? This is what I want. My guy is undefeated. I say, okay, it's going to be a great fight. And the Paulo beat the guy in the first round in 3 minutes. In the end of the fight, Paulo asked for the belt. I say, fuck, you crazy. You fight one time in Jungle Fight to ask for the belt? Come on, man. Now you're going to see I'm going to be the champion. And he was the champion. After he fought twice, and get the belt. And the history of Paulo is crazy, man. He almost not come to UFC. Almost.
What do you mean?
We get the deal for Japan. Mm-hmm. Almost the deal make. Like, was for fight in December. And the Japan call me, say, hey, we need to postpone his fight for March. I say, hey, man, the guy sell his car to do the camp. He sell everything to do this camp for this fight. And the guy said, hey, Waleed, you can help him to pay his camp, but you're just going to put him to fight Marsh. And I call Mick. I say, Mick, this guy is one of the best fighters I ever saw in my life. And you know, I'm from this business in the beginning. When I tell you I never see somebody like him, you need to believe me. You're going to lose him to Japan. He's supposed to fight in Japan, and Japan cancel. And the Mick say, okay, Waleed, they're going to get Paulo, Bojachinha. I call Bojachinha and say, hey, I just talked to Mick, and the Mick wants you. And Paulo, where's the contract? I say, relax, man. When you have to say one thing, you can count. These guys have a word. I say, but Waleed, they need the contract, man. It cannot happen again. I say, don't worry, man. You know what I mean? We'll have a lunch. I said, don't worry. When UFC give his word, forget about it. And this happened. UFC send the contract, and the rest is the history. And you guys going to see on Saturday, one of, I truly believe the Paulo Costa not just going to be the champion. He's going to be one of the best fighters for all time. Because the Paulo Costa, the razor, discipline, the focus, the desire he has, man, I never seen my life.
Wow. So when you saw him first in 2015, when he signed with Jungle Fight, did you believe that he would turn into this, or did it take you some time to believe that he would be as great as you thought, or as you say he is today?
In the first fight I saw, he's different. Believe me, I have about 1,000 guys in Jungle Fight in Brazil. Jungle Fight is like a minor league. It's like in soccer, we call Libertadores da America. It's like a South America championship, you know what I mean? I discovered the guys to put in UFC. And when I saw him the first time, I say, hey, man, this guy is different. When he fights for the second time, I say, hey, he's something. And I went to lunch with him. And after he got the belt, and they put him to fight in Japan, and Japan, like, canceled the fight. I never go out with the fighters. My life, who follow me in the Instagram is going to say my life is crazy. By the way, follow me on Instagram, WALLIDJFC.
Yes.
And who follow me is going to see I travel every week, you know what I mean, in Brazil to do the jungle fight, to see the fighters train. And I went to the lunch with him. I said, hey, man, I really believe you have a bright future, a great future. Man, you're going to be fine. Believe me. When I call Mick, and Mick accepted him to fight. This when I saw him, you know what I mean? After he got the belt, I really see he is a real deal. Because in jungle fight, I'm not a coach. I'm not managing the guys when he is in jungle fight. Just when he gets the belt, and when Paulo gets the belt, man, he ready to fight any in the World Cup, because I call UFC the World Cup of MMA.
And now he's finally fighting for the belt against Israel Adesanya on Saturday, September 26th. And there's a lot of bad blood between them. Could you describe how Paulo feels about Izzy? Because Izzy has accused him of being on steroids and called him names. You were with him. And man, I mean, what is it like?
Man, I'm going to tell you, man.
Tell me.
Was the funniest thing we ever, happened. Every time we say, oh, you need to walk with security. I'm not going to walk with us. Come on. We come from the jungle. We don't need security. And the first day we went to make the test, the second day test, yeah. And they went there. When you come back for the test, Badol, the box coach, said, hey, they're Adesanya. And the Paulo passed for Adesanya, said, hey, what's up? Something like that. And I said, hey, what's up? And pass go to the elevator. And the guy says, Adesanya, come here. Oh, come on. This is the time we're feeling. Who is really, you know what I mean? Everything he said, he mean business. And when he looked to Paulo and said, hey, you're looking good. Something like that. You're looking good. You're looking good.
Skinny. Something like you're that. Looking skinny say. Or something.
No. This was after.
Oh, okay.
This was after. You say, yeah. You say you. No, I like. I Paul. No. I like. I like you. I Paul. What do you like me? Like that. What do you like me? You say no. I like you skinny. And Paul say no. I never skinny. I'm lean. I think that I'm fit, but I never skinny. Like, you know what I mean? And okay, bye. And we go out and say, hey, man, I cannot believe the guy is scared. Because in the first match, in the first time the guys see each other, Adesanya disappointed. He like, you know what I mean? You're not going to fight. You know, it's a business. For sure the guys hate each other, but you feel if the guy is real or not. For our camp, Adesanya is not real.
Wow.
I tell you, in the bottom of my heart, yes. You know what I mean? Like, our impression of him, even Paulo looked to him and said, he's not that tall. I think he lied about his size.
Wow.
This is what you think. Was so disappointed. But believe me, Paulo is focused. You know why Paul is so confident? He makes 5 months of camp. This camp was amazing. The first time the UFC offered Paul to fight was July 18. Paul said yes. After August, push for September. Hours to say yes. And now, finally, September 26th is next Saturday. Man, it's going to be a war. if Adesanya think he's play nice guy, Paulo is gonna be nice to him. Paulo gonna brutalize him. I really believe Paulo is gonna spunk him.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How do you see it playing out? Short fight, long fight, back and forth fight? What do you think?
I'm going to tell you.
Tell me.
Paulo is ready for anything. He's ready to be a long fight. He trained for do 5 rounds. But he really believes he's going to destroy Adesanya in the first round. But he prepared to do 5 rounds. You know what I mean? He believes. His mind is going to destroy Adesanya in the first round.
Wow.
But he really prepared to do 10 rounds. If you see this kid, how this kid trained, you cannot believe how fast he is right now. If we talk about not gain a lot of weight, we don't want to gain a lot of weight because he's so fast. Like, you want to keep almost like that for you have idea how good he feel right now. He say, Valide, we just talk now. Say, I have 91 kilogram right now. It's like about 200 pounds. You know, in another camp today, Tuesday, I have 205. I'm wearing 5 pounds before last. To a normal camp, to you see how prepared Paulo Costa is right now. Man, we're so excited for this fight. And I tell you the truth, was really disappointed when Adesanya really, like, I don't know, explained, man. I really think we think it was a game for Adesanya because he cannot look so scared like that. He cannot look, we think it's a game. Because he cannot look so different to what he talk on TV. Because if he show, I ask Adesanya, please show all, because I have the guy film him all the time. Show the whole situation. Because you saw, he just show when he passed by Paulo, say, hi. He not show when you call him back, hey Adesanya, come here. Talk to him. I challenge Adesanya to show to everybody everything what happened. Because the people gonna see, gonna judge who is scared or who you wanna is a real deal.
And Valide, for you, if Paulo wins on Saturday, you'll have two champions in the UFC because you also have Deiveson Figueiredo, the new flyweight champ. This guy dresses so nice.
Deiveson Figueiredo is going to kill Corey Nochin. Corey Nochin going to fight a knockout artist. I fight for this fight. I tell you the truth. Because I want to, Deiveson, destroy Corey Nochin. And Corey, but let's go focus on Paulo, because okay. This fight is going to be historic because Paulo don't like Adesanya, but now we think how Adesanya is like is hard to analyze. For us, Adesanya play a game because he cannot be afraid like that.
But he's a good fighter, right?
He's going to mess up in the next time.
You've seen fighting, right? You have to say he's a good fighter, right? He's very talented.
I'm going to tell you the truth, man.
Tell me.
He's a talent. He's a county guy. You know what I mean?
He's a
when the guy is a punch counter.
Oh, counter striker. Counter. Yeah.
Counter striker. Yeah. Counter striker. If Paulo, Paulo's not gonna give way to him to be a counter striker. Paulo gonna destroy him. You know, people don't understand. I never see in my life the guy have the fight, the ability Paulo has, and the mind, fight mind. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
His mind is the fighter, the killer. And now on Saturday, the Warriors management, my company called Warriors Management, is gonna have two UFC champions, Paulo Costa and Davidson Figueiredo, and Amanda Lemos coming. Is the girl coming, Amanda Lemos. She has three fights, but in the 115, have two fights, two wins. We have so many guys, man. I'm going to tell you the truth. He's just a beginner, because who love MMA gonna see the sport explode. And we are in Abu Dhabi.
It's great.
Ariel, we are in the place. You know, today I went to my Instagram. I say, hey, look, these people lived in the tent 100 years ago. My people 100 years ago. Now he's built the city. Look at the city. Look how amazing is the place here. You know what I mean? And now Abu Dhabi is the capital, world capital of MMA. This is amazing.
Valid, always a pleasure, my friend. You got me so excited for the fight on Saturday. I knew you would do it. I knew I needed a little shot of Valid in my life. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
I'm going to tell you the truth. It's just a beginning, my brother.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Easiest interview of my life. Beginning. Ask three questions and you take the rest. I love it.
No, man, because, you know, I found this sport in before exist sport. This is the people like you asking, who you know who you are. Man, I'm the hassle guy. You know what I mean? I love this sport. You know what I mean? I love to come in. When I put everything together, I told Hunter, don't let me be out for this time, man. With Dave, so have so much problem. Like, I not came because of the coronavirus. But now, I did the test twice. Don't let me down. And I love Hunter, man. He say, Hunter, like my accent's bad. And they say, you know, me, take care of me. Man, I glad to talk to you because, you know, I'm your big fan. Because you, I always say that you always clear in the sport, man. And help the sport to grow even
Obrigado. Thank you, Valido.
And good luck. And even guys. Speak Portuguese, my brother.
Yes, bom dia. And I'll say, if all goes well on Saturday, parabéns. But for now, good luck. I don't know how you say good luck in Portuguese. How do you say good luck?
No, man. Luck. Most I work, more luck I have. You know what I mean?
Yes.
This is a luck. Luck is a hard work. Luck is you have a desire. You have a focus. You have a faith and discipline. This is our luck. This is what I believe.
Amen. Thank you, Valid.
Okay, my brother. Thank you very much. And let's go. Hey, you watch this interview. You're going to see a war on September 26th. You're going to see two guys like, you know, I'm going to repeat, hate each other, but one has the desire to destroy, and the another one, I believe, is going to mess up. Because in the first meet, Paulo and Borrachinha was disappointed. And I'm going to ask him again, Adesanya, please put the full footage for the people who make the judgment, who is scared or who is really business, come from the business, come from, you know what I mean? Come for everything, man. Everything or nothing. This how we play. And it's going to be everything. It's going to be the UFC belt, the second UFC belt for Warriors Management on September 26th.
God, I love talking to Waleed Ishmael. I mean, the guy, it just sits there and talks for 11 straight minutes. I don't have to do anything. I think I asked like three questions in that entire interview. What a great character. What a great fight on Saturday. Again, it's 19-0. Israel Adesanya going up against Paulo Costa, 13-0. Just the second time in modern day UFC history. I feel like I've said this now a million times. But I'll say it one more time. Two undefeated male fighters fighting for an undisputed title. Last time it happened, only time it happened, UFC 98, Rashad Evans against Lyoto Machida. Plus, you got Jan Błachowicz going up against Dominic Reyes. You heard from them over the past month or so right here on the show for the vacant light heavyweight title. I'm looking forward to that. First time in 9 years that someone not named John Jones or Daniel Cormier is the light heavyweight champ. So that's very interesting. And I think it's going to be a great fight. The king without a crown, Dominic Reyes, returns to action. You got Kaikar France. You got Caitlin Vieira returning. Hakeem Dawoodu, who's always a lot of fun. And what about Diego Sanchez returning with Stefan Bonner, of all people, in his corner? Four members of City Kickboxing on the card. So there's something for everyone on Saturday, and the action kicks off at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus and ESPN 2. And then the main card, of course, 10 p.m. Eastern only on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. Yes, they'll be fighting in the middle of the night. And this is one of many cards this week going on in MMA. Cage Warriors doing three shows, September 24th, 25th, and 26th, back to back to back, so that they can make up for lost time. Bellator back in Milan, Italy, UFC 253. On Saturday, Ryzen returning on September 27th, Sunday, technically late night Saturday. So there's just so much going on in the world of MMA. But of course, the big one is 253 back in Abu Dhabi. We're going back to Abu Dhabi. Anyway, at the top of the show, I mentioned that I spoke to Marshawn Lynch. You've probably heard of Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch, in case you haven't heard of him, is one of the all-time greats in the world of football. He's one of the best running backs of all time. He most recently was seen playing for the Seattle Seahawks. This year, he's out of the league. His future very much up in the air. He's now venturing into the world of martial arts. He's a color commentator for the upstart Karate Combat promotion. He's working with the great Boss Rutten. So we spoke to him about doing this gig, about whether or not he will play football again, about training with an MMA trainer named Tariq Azim, who's trained the likes of Luke Rockhold and Jake Shields, about all that stuff and more. It was a great conversation. But I also asked him about his infamous Super Bowl Media Day press conference where he showed up a few years ago and he just kept repeating, "I'm just here so I won't get fined." And in fact, last week I thought of Marshawn even before I knew I was going to talk to him, because Tyron Woodley showed up to the pre-fight press conference for the Colby Covington fight and kept repeating Black Lives Matter. And it reminded me a lot. The message was different, obviously, but it reminded me a lot of what Marshawn did several years ago. So I asked him about that, what the mindset is like of an athlete in that spot, and about his memories, and if he knew about Tyron doing this last week. Here's what Marshawn had to say. There was a big fight last Saturday involving a guy named Tyron Woodley. He's a former champion. He was fighting a guy named Colby Covington, and he showed up to the press conference on Thursday and didn't answer a single question. He just kept saying Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Did you see
that?
Okay,
yeah, yeah.
And it reminded us of you at the Super Bowl saying, "I'm just here so I won't get fined." Everyone was talking about how this was like very reminiscent of that press conference. And I was wondering if you saw what Tyron did, and if so, what you thought of it.
I heard of it. I mean, not heard of it, but I seen it through the net. Realistically, at the end of the day, when you one of them type of guys and you set in your mindset, like, I believe that all the outside shit just don't do the same as it probably would have when it was, you was feeling you needed to be in everybody's face. But when you make it about your craft, all of that shit just fall to the waistline. And it's like, everybody know why I'm on the stage right now. It's to fight. So check me out. Jaw jacking or whatever, mess me with that shit. Let's get down to action. You know what I mean?
So if you want to listen to my entire interview with Marshawn Lynch, go to the ESPN MMA YouTube channel, youtube.com/ESPN MMA. Marshawn doesn't like to do media, and I wasn't sure what I'd get. I didn't even know if he'd show up, but we spoke for 20 plus minutes. He was in a great mood. He was funny. We talked about a whole host of things. It was a lot of fun. Former Buffalo Bill, so I got a Bill mention in there. I know some of you people out there don't like the non-MMA talk, so if you do, go over to the ESPN MMA YouTube channel. Check it out. You will enjoy it. I can promise you that. All right, now time for everyone's favorite segment of the week. It is time for TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week. And as always, it is brought to you by Modelo. Modelo Especial. Setting the gold standard for authentic Mexican beer since 1925. Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
Ariel, a common routine of many minimalists or the most successful people in the world in general is to have a morning routine. So this is something that a lot of minimalists do, where routines are very, very good to have. I think many of the world's most famous, most successful people throughout history that I have studied, that I've read about or listened to podcasts about, they all sing the praises of the morning routine. They often consist of some form of exercise or some form of journaling, perhaps meditation, writing, reading, some form of education, usually as the sun is coming up. So I suggest that if you do not have a morning routine in your life, that you identify some behaviors that you think can be very soothing to you, that involve a little more creative mindset or just something that gets you better. And I guarantee Israel Adesanya has a fight week routine. I think routines are very key to have for all minimalists and for all people. So get a morning routine. Ariel, do you have a morning routine?
I do. It usually involves, you know, making my kids lunch and breakfast and then taking them to school. And once again, you and my wife, you guys would get along. She is big into routine. She loves routine. She loves having, you know, a set, not schedule, but like a set certain things that you will do every single day. So she's big into that. And that includes exercising. She's big into exercising every single day, even if it's for 10 minutes. If you can only do 10 minutes, just do it because it's very important. So once again, you and Mrs. Helwani, Jacqueline, as Daniel likes to remind us each and every week that he knows her name but doesn't know my kid's name, would get along. Maybe one of these days you two can meet. For now,
yeah,
though,
I would love to be invited over.
No,
sometime,
no, it's not gonna happen anytime soon.
Watch Izzy win.
No. I mean, it's a pandemic and everything. We can't be within 6 feet of each other. That whole thing. But speaking of Izzy, he is returning to action this Saturday. It's him versus Bohachinha, Paulo Costa, the Eraser. Again, ESPN Plus pay per view, 10 p.m. Eastern. Check it out. Whole host of things coming your way on Saturday. The usual pre fight stuff. So check that out as well. Continue to rate, download, subscribe, review. You know what the drill is. I appreciate the support. Keep doing it. It means a lot. It helps a lot. Believe me, it does. Thank you very much to Valid Ishmael. Thank you very much to Marshawn Lynch. And of course, thank you very much to the great Michael Chandler. Congratulations to him. Thank you, TST. Thanks to all of you. Back next week, same time and place. Tell us, say, peace. I'm out of here.